Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Business Book Podcast. I'm your host, Derek Lewis, and it's my pleasure to have as a guest today, David Hancock. David is a publisher of, not just a publisher, he's the founder of the publisher Morgan James Publishing. Also, if you've done anything in small business marketing or even in book marketing, you've come across guerrilla marketing. He's the chairman of Guerrilla Marketing International. Not only is he a publisher, he's co-authored 12 books of his own, including Performance-Driven Thinking that we were just talking about before we got on the call, then as well as The Entrepreneurial Author. This blew my mind. The NASDAQ cited David as one of the world's most prestigious business leaders, and he's reported to be the future of publishing. As the founder of Morgan James, he's named a finalist in the Best Chairman category in the American Business Awards, held by the New York Post as the business world's own Oscars. And he was also selected for Fast Company's Fast 50 for his leadership in the publishing industry over a decade. He also serves as the president of the executive board for Habitat for Humanity Peninsula in Greater Williamsburg. And he's on the chairman of the board for the National Center for the Prevention of Community Violence. And if all of that weren't enough, Publishers Weekly also named Morgan James Publishing as one of the fastest growing small press lists for 5 years. David, that's a lot of work in just a few years. You've been busy.
Oh my gosh, we've had so much fun. I appreciate you sharing that with everybody, but I'm humbled, but it really has been a lot of fun. I tell you, that NASDAQ thing was a lot of fun. That was actually 2008. So we were still wet behind the ears. We were founded in 2003, and by 2008, we were starting to figure out who we were, you know, as a publisher, but they actually caught, or we caught their eye because of our giving back. We're a Habitat for Humanity building partner, which literally just means that we love to raise awareness. We donate funds to Habitat. We donate a library of books to the new homeowners. We do it because we think it's a great give back, but it's really been a great benefit for us too, to be able to share that with, you know, those in our circles. But we caught their eye because of that. They invited us to go out there to New York City and ring the opening bell on December, I think, 18th, 2008. It was so much fun. had some time to spend with them. It was amazing.
That's too cool. Yeah, Habitat right. for Humanity, man. They're a great organization. I haven't had the opportunity to do a project with them directly, but I've worked with a lot of people who have, and I've never heard anything but the best of praise for Habitat for Humanity's management as well as their volunteers. It's a really well put together program.
Yeah, I agree. I was a I won't go back too far. Maybe I won't go back to birth. How's that? But for me, I was a I was a home builder in the 90s and built homes. I was always a huge fan of home ownership. I bought my first house when I was 19. But then after I was a builder, I became a banker. I was a mortgage banker for years. And that's where I actually wrote my first book, which, you know, part of my story is I ended up writing a book just to gain some extra edge in competitive, because I was competing with 1,000 people just like me, offering basically the same product and service as everybody else. They all had different names, but basically they're all regulated products. So I had to figure out what could I do to stand out and stay on top. And it wasn't until I discovered a book called Guerrilla Marketing, there's the beginning of that story, that I realized that I had to do things unconventionally. I had to do things with using my time, my energy, and my imagination instead of the bank account. Now, generally, that's for people who don't have access to funds for marketing or don't have the extra money to spend and be creative with marketing or advertising. Even though, as one of the, you know, the banks that I worked for, we basically had an unlimited ad budget. I could spend $100,000 a month in marketing and advertising if I wanted to, but so did all my competition. So it just didn't work. So I had to figure out ways to stand out, and hired Jay Levinson as a coach. And the first thing he said that I needed to do was, second thing, he said I need to keep doing what I'm doing because it was working, but he said, then you need to add a book. So I end up, after struggling with the whole concept of who in the world would want to listen to me, I ended up writing a book, and it doubled my income as a banker. Just that whole perception of me being the authority and being the only one in my space that had written a book on the topic. You know, the media called me on a regular basis. The competition looked at me and couldn't figure it out. And all the clients were calling me all because of that crazy business book.
I still don't think that so many potential business authors or would-be business authors understand just how powerful of a tool a business book can be. So, you know, they talk of, or they discount, you know, their knowledge. Well, and like you said, there's 1,000 other people offering the same thing that you do. And from the outside looking in, it's a commodity. So how do you stand out? But from the inside, from, you know, being standing in the expert shoes looking out, everybody knows the same thing I do. There's nothing new or there's nothing different about the way I do things. But it doesn't matter. Having that book helps you differentiate you, helps you stand apart from the crowd. Just the fact that you wrote a book, and much less whenever they get into it and they realize that, all the things that go into a book.
I was just going to say the three things that Jay used to compel me were very simple. The first thing he said, David, if, and then of course all of us entrepreneurs and small business people out there need to pay attention to this because it's important. He said, if you wanted to charge more and negotiate less, he said, you got to keep doing what you're doing because it's working. It basically continued to hustle. But you needed to add the one more thing, and that one more thing ended up being the book, you know, that extra edge and credibility that made people recognize that you are the authority, you're the leader in the space because you wrote the book on it. And then people won't negotiate with you quite as much. For me, I literally just doubled all my fees and nobody asked for a discount anymore. It was amazing. And then he went on to say, he said, David, if you wanted to have those people that would never give you the time of day, those clients that you wish you could work with, he said, if you wanted those people to start banging on your door and begging you to take their business, you've got to keep doing what you're doing, but need to add the one more thing. And again, the same concept was the book. And sure enough, you know, in the sea of people offering the same services as I was, or maybe just like your audience was, the one thing that stood me out over everybody else was I was the authority. I was the one that they could trust that I knew what I was doing. Now, I didn't necessarily know more than my competition. I was just perceived at this point now as an author to know more than my competition. And then the last thing, which really I didn't really expect, but it was very significant, and it helped with the first two things. He said, David, if you wanted to have the media call you when something happened in the space, you've got to keep doing what you're doing because it's working. But he said, once you add the book, you know, they'll need and want a local go-to person to air on their radio shows versus the bobblehead that they get from their corporate offices and, you know, whatnot. And sure enough, and as soon as I wrote the book and started to leverage the fact that I was the author of and the authority of and did a couple of press releases, and, you know, the media was calling me on a regular basis. I was on the radio or television or in print weekly because something always happened in the banking space back then. And it was all because I was on the local Yahoo who had the authority, quote unquote, to talk about it. It was laughable. I mean, it really was. It was amazing. As you can imagine, I caught the fever for writing books, so it gets in your system. But it really, really can work. So even though we, myself included, don't think that I didn't think I had anything good to say. I even thought I didn't have enough content to even fill a book. But realize that after just kind of fleshing out a rough outline of if some knucklehead would sit down with me, I could share these 10 things with them. And if you hadn't kicked me out yet, maybe I can get 12 out of it, you know, those kind of things. But then realize I thought, you know, maybe I could do that, you know, and I ended up filling up the outline with just a paragraph at a time as something happened or as I discovered I had some content or, you know, posts or articles I'd written in the past, and ended up putting the book together pretty simple. But it was that was the easy part. But it can work. It really can. So I'm a huge fan of leveraging a book. It's got to be a good book. Obviously, you got to put your best stuff in the book, and the reader needs to benefit from it. But oh my gosh, from an entrepreneurial perspective, the book is the most powerful weapon you can have in your arsenal of things to do to gain market share. It's amazing.
You know, there's something that you've said over and over again. Number one, do what you're doing. What I'd like to point out is so powerful about that is that a lot of authors, they don't have any kind of marketing platform And they write the book, and then they either get the book published or they self-publish. But they don't really have any idea of what to do with it.
Right.
And I think that the fact that you were already doing marketing, that the book is, you know, was gasoline, you know, you're throwing on the fire. Now there's plenty of authors that, you know, start with the book and then they use the book to build their platform. But I've always found that it's a lot easier if you start marketing and then you use the book rather than use the book to jumpstart. Because even after you write the book, you still have to market, as Jay, you know, kept on telling you, do what you're doing
That's right.
and have the book.
That's right. And it is a funny little catch-22 because the reality is most publishers won't talk to you until you have a platform that they're jealous of. But then sometimes nothing can give you the platform that you deserve until you have a book. But I will say the worst thing you can do as an author, self-publishers, authors are usually the ones who do this the most. Again, I'm a huge fan of self-publishing. I think it's certainly better than doing nothing at all. But just treat it with the respect that it deserves. So, give an example. The worst thing to do is to today not have a book and be, you know, doing the same things you've been doing all along, whatever that might be. And then tomorrow you announce you have a book in your hand, it's available for sale for $20. Buy it now. That's the worst thing you can do. You want to build the audience up with you down that path to becoming the authority, to becoming that published author. There's a great book that I highly recommend. Many of you probably have already read it. But just as a recap, you definitely should read and start implementing it today, right now, if not yesterday. If you can do it yesterday, that's even best. But it's a book called Platform by Michael Hyatt. It's just a very, you know, you've heard of it. So it's a very simple book about how to get noticed in a very noisy world. And it talks about things that we're already kind of familiar with, you know, social media, blogging, podcasts, things like that. But it just reiterates how important those things are. We take them all for granted, or we say, everybody's doing that, or I'm not really sure that's working for me. It's the consistency in doing those multiple things at the same time and being consistent with it can make a huge difference in growing your platform. But then you have an audience to kind of test your ideas out, share your ideas out with, but also bring along with you down this path to you rising to that becoming the authority in your space. So as you're starting to blog and share through social media, just about your regular content, the fact that you are knowledgeable in your field, you plant seeds that, hey, that I'm deciding or thinking about writing a book to help my audience with this, whatever. And then you bring them along the process. I submitted a book proposal. I drafted an outline and I've got friends looking at it. Or I've, you know, it's like I said, submitted it to a publisher. You know, I've got turned down. I've got picked up by a publisher. And then you kind of bring them down this path, no matter how many weeks or months it takes. You know, I've got a contract now. I just got accepted by a publisher. I just signed. Oh, it's coming out in the fall. And then share that process with your audience. You know, and still 90% of your communication is about what they're going to get out of knowing you. So you guys still got to educate them, encourage them, inspire, and then maybe even entertain them a little bit. And the other 10% can be about the book. And then once the book comes out, then you've got an audience that's been vested with you during this process. They'll be more than willing to buy the book, more than willing to share it with you, more than willing to promote it because, you know, you've already earned that right. You bring them through that process so that you become the authority in their eyes because they're with you, or they see it, or they can see your history in your blog or whatnot. And that helps you really leverage the fact that, yes, you are the authority now. You have the book, and then you can, you know, sell the book. Although I will say it's really hard to sell a book, and I don't encourage authors to just go peddle books because it's very discouraging and nobody wants to buy your book. But as you continue to coach them that you're the authority, I kind of sped through that, but that's the truth. Nobody wants to buy my book. I compel them why they should, you know, why they should listen to me. Then they want to buy the book, or then they're compelled to buy.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, I've never quite heard it like that, but you're right. That's the nobody actually wants to buy a book, and nobody actually wants to read a book. They want a solution to their problem, and once you give them a compelling reason why your book is the answer to what they're facing, then they have a reason to want to read it.
Yep.
But that's very different than just someone just wanting to buy it. Yeah.
And very different from someone just trying to sell a product too. And the reality is 70%, this is from Publishers Weekly, 70% of the book buyers only read 30% of the book. So you've really got to leverage the fact that you're the authority even before they finish the book or start the book, because that's where it's hanging. Just to expect them to read the book and go, oh, he is the authority or she is the authority, is not going to happen. You've got to be in that space already and be delivering great content through whatever medium you're using, whether it's speaking or social media or blogging or all the above, the book is just a powerful tool. Now, we hope that they finish the book. We hope they read it and they hire you as a speaker or buy all your other products. But the reality is you'll make more money because of the book than you ever will from the book.
Yeah, I wrote in my book that authors don't count on their book sales. They count on what their book's selling.
That's right. That's tweet.
I hadn't come across that that statistic. 30% of the readers only read. 70% of the readers only read 30% of the book. Intuitively, we know that most people don't finish most of the books that they pick up. I mean, I love to read, and I don't finish most of the books that I pick up.
Right.
I don't know about most. I don't finish a lot of them because they're boring, or because a better book comes along, or because I feel like I've got most of the stuff out of it. But I'm glad that you shared that statistic. The last any kind of fact like that, little factoid that I'd come across, was Dan Pointer had quoted, but he never did say the name of the source, so I never could trace it down. But he said that in a study that he read or a report that he saw, that most people, the vast majority of people, only read the first 18 pages of a given book. And so you've got to do a lot of work on the packaging of the book, the positioning of the book, the title, and the table of contents, and especially that first chapter, because that's where most of your bang is going to be, because people just aren't going to get to the rest of it. It's disheartening, especially whenever we pour our heart and souls into a book. That's the truth, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also to be careful not to put all your best meat in the introduction, because most readers skip the introduction. I'm one of those. I'll for whatever reason, I'll skip the introduction. I want to get to the meat. Even though a lot of authors put a lot of great meat in the introduction, we pray it gets read as an author, but just keep that in mind. You share some great wisdom, open some concepts, mindset concepts or something in the introduction. Things like that, but make sure your meat is discoverable in the table of contents and discoverable in chapter one and beyond, but don't put it all in the introduction.
I counsel my authors not to do an introduction, because it's an outdated convention. And in fact, I've had to argue with a couple of publishers. One of them, I won the argument. The other one, I lost the argument. We had to keep the author's intro in there. But that's one of my little pet peeves, or intros and prefaces and a foreword to the not forewords, because those are usually actually really great because they're written by someone else, right? So it's exactly. a different take on the author's book. And
in fact, on a foreword side, they can be very powerful from a bookstore buyer and a sales rep perception. They help. The forward helps gain that additional credibility and recognition to an author who's still being discovered. If the forward's written by somebody that a sales rep or the Barnes & Noble category buyer recognizes, it can make a significant impact on their perception of the book.
Right.
The best forwards are very short, and they're more about the author than they are about the book or the content, or about why the author is the best person to bring it to the market. And then preferably somebody that's in that space, but definitely somebody that's got a national recognition. And I always coach authors is you may not feel like you need one or really want one, but it's always a good thing to have, and never stop asking, because 3 years from now, you might meet somebody that's willing to write a forward for the second edition. So never stop asking for those endorsements or potential forwards from the day you conceive the idea of the book to the day you die. or until it's no longer relevant to you, one of those things, whichever comes first.
Yeah, well, a book is like having a baby in many ways, and one of them is that once it's born, it's with you for life.
That's right. And speaking of which, just like you as a parent wouldn't birth a child and then just ignore it, a lot of authors will generate a book or publish a book, then they're tired of it, or they're their own circle of influence is tired of it, so they just ignore it or don't give it the attention. You wouldn't do that to your own child. So you got to treat your book just like a child by nurturing it and raising it and helping it succeed in life after it comes out, after the pub date.
Yeah. Speaking of children, it took me a little bit of reading to figure out why you're the founder of Morgan James, but your name is David Hancock. And I finally read in your bio or somewhere that you'd named it after your two sons. That's pretty sweet.
That's right. It meant something to me. Sounded like a real company name. And it definitely meant something to me. But Morgan is my platinum blonde, blue-eyed baby girl, who's now 16. And James is now 18, and he's my little Einstein. He's so much smarter than me. Well, so is Morgan. But it sounded like a good name. It felt right, and I could be proud of it.
Yeah.
Thanks for noticing.
I've got a little blonde-haired girl, and then a cute little toddling boy. So kind of tugged on my heartstrings a little bit here, close to home.
Awesome.
So let's talk about Morgan James. Let's talk about, let's do this, David. Could you talk to us about your typical author's journey? Now, I know that Morgan James does a number of different titles and a number of different genres, but let's talk about, if you would, your business authors. So let's talk about your typical business author's journey from whenever you want to start over their journey, and then how they can come to find Morgan James and how they work with Morgan James, and then all the way to the other side of, like you said, until the day you die.
That's right.
Just give us that nice lifelong journey.
Oh, cool. So you're right. We do publish a number of different genres over the last 15 years. We've kind of carved out some really neat things that we're having fun with. All of our books are designed to either educate, encourage, or inspire, and maybe even entertain the audience, like I mentioned earlier. But the common core is, no matter what book they're writing and what genre it might go into, our authors tend to be entrepreneurial in nature, and the book is part of something bigger. So even our clean fiction division to our faith division, even our kids division, they're all part of something bigger. And usually it's because of a business or an opportunity or nonprofit or something that's driving that author to create the product to change the world in some aspect or another. But our typical business author is an entrepreneur. They may have a desk job, as like I did. I had a W-2 desk job working at a bank back in the 90s, but I was, missioned. My overall success deeply depended on how hard I worked. So that's our typical author. It's somebody who's very passionate about a topic. They've got some great content they can share. They know something, a secret or a tactic or something that somebody else could use to benefit themselves, to grow their business. They love giving back, and they're very passionate. I think I already mentioned that, but very passionate about their work. They're not necessarily authors per se. They may have a book or be compelled to write a book, but they wouldn't necessarily find themselves or label themselves as an author initially, but they're just very passionate about their topic. And then they get compelled to or learn about how to leverage that, that knowledge in the form of a book to grow their business. So, my perfect author or a typical Morgan James business author, it was just like me when I was a banker. I had something, I was working something very unique. I was creating value and relationships and trying to add value and trying to help others meet their needs, and ended up writing a book that transformed my life. So that's the exact same thing that that we publish typically. It doesn't have to be the best, most literary renowned work of art. It just needs to be their best work in the book. Most of our books are short. They're short enough to compel the reader that they're paying attention to the right person, but very still affordable. So even 5 years ago, when most publishers and authors are bringing out 300-page hardcover books, that's changed. Now bookstore buyers say we consumers are looking for shorter, more affordable, easier to skim books now more than ever. So we're looking at authors now who are doing 40 to 60,000 words, a good 180 to 220-page books, and doing primarily paperback for the bookstore market, because that's what the consumers are asking for. So we're working with authors trying to help them figure out ways to leverage those things, or the authors are looking for us because they want to figure out ways to leverage those things as well. And then our process of discovery is pretty fun. We've got a handful of acquiring editors that go out there to, you know, business conferences, and they meet great people who are passionate about their topic, and we try to fall in love with them. And then we have a 5-person publication board internally that helps us figure out which books can we really get excited about, which authors can we fall in love with and get and catch their passion and their enthusiasm, because it's needed. You know, an author could have the best book in the world, but if they're not passionate, enthusiastic, and you know, motivated to hustle with the book, it's really hard to get a sales rep to be passionate and enthusiastic about it, because it's got to be contagious. And then, you know, same thing, the sales reps have got to get the bookstore buyers, you know, passionate and enthusiastic about their products. So it's got to fall all the way down, trickle all the way down from the author. And then, you know, for us, 80% of our decision is the author. You know, who are they? What are they doing? Why are they doing it? And will the reader benefit from it? And then are they coachable? Are they willing to hustle in a good way and willing to follow the best practices of other authors that have gone before them? Or are there entrepreneurs as well, you know? It doesn't mean that we as a publisher are looking for authors that are willing to spend money or, you know, buy advertising, because those things don't work long term.
I'm laughing. No, I'm laughing at the word coachable. I was just talking to an editor at a publisher a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about her problem children, and they are authors who are intransigent, authors who are unwilling to. Because you know, whenever you're working with a publisher, I mean, you know this better than I, David. It's a partnership, and in any partnership, there's give and take, there's compromise, and you know, the author brings that passion and the knowledge, and brings so much to the table, but the publisher brings a wealth of information, a wealth of experience, and also usually has a pulse on what's actually going on in the market. So it's a give and take. And I think whenever you use the word coachable, I think you're saying that you're looking for authors who understand that it's it's a collaboration, it's a partnership.
It really is. You know, for us, we've been blessed with 28 New York Times bestsellers, most of which in the last 5 years, which is just amazing. Most publishers our size never get one.
Yeah,
thank you so
much. Amazing.
I appreciate that. But we learned a lot from those authors that are breaking those boundaries, and we try to share those down to the rest of our authors. And when we get talking to an author who doesn't seem to understand that they're building blocks. You do this, this, and this, and you'll gain this eventually, you know. So it's very frustrating. And part of the weeding out process for us, if we come across an author that doesn't seem to be coachable, we'd just be spinning our wheels, and we may not recoup our investment in the process. But an author that's willing to learn what it doesn't already know, and willing to share that passion and that enthusiasm to their audience, it can make a big difference. Absolutely. And just like I mentioned earlier, it's bringing the author to the understanding that it's a process, just like giving birth. The process is, as I mentioned earlier, sharing the process with your fans, leveraging your audience or building your audience as you're going down this path to publishing. Granted, it only takes a publisher 90 days or less to print the book, you know, or we usually go from, you know, finished manuscript to book in hands in about 90 days. It takes another, you know, 10 months to get into bookstores typically. But during that time, the authors can still leverage the fact that they've got the book coming out. And a lot of our authors will use that book for their speaking or off of their website and share, you know, advanced reader copies of the book or special pre-publication copies of the book, making it special. And just kind of continuing to build the fact that they're the authority behind the book, so that when it comes time to launch the book, they're out there ready and willing. One of the fun things that we get to do is all my fun times I've had playing in the guerrilla marketing space. You know, I discovered Jay when I was on my search of figuring out what could I do to stay on top. And I discovered guerrilla marketing when it was in its third edition. And I ended up reading the book and realized I was a guerrilla and just didn't know it. And I reached out to Jay because he encouraged me to do so in his book, which is another thing we all should do as authors, and ended up hiring Jay as a coach. And he coached me on the things that I should do, and then the things that I shouldn't do. And if I hadn't followed those instructions, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation right now. Of course, I was paying him a lot of money back then too, but we became fast friends. It's all about surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you, so you can take your business further, but also, you know, learn something or two.
Yeah, and that's mean, I think that's one of the things that I love about being an entrepreneur is that the challenges arise naturally, and in trying to adapt to those challenges and trying to conquer those challenges, it forces you to get out of your comfort zone. It forces you to reach out to other people, to other sources, and to grow, right? To grow so that you have the skill set and the mindset to confront the challenge and the problems that are before you. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I started reading business books in the first place. And then that's one of the reasons that I still love seeing great business books come out into the world, because they, if done right, they matter. They help people. They help.
Oh,
I mean, you doubled your income, but almost more importantly than that, or maybe more importantly than that, changed the course of your life. You know, I mean, you went from being a mortgage banker to now being a publisher ringing the NASDAQ bell. I mean, I don't know if you'd have been ringing the NASDAQ bell if you'd have stayed a mortgage lender.
No, I definitely
wouldn't. And it's because, and it's because you came across a great business book written by a great business author. You learned a lot, and, you know, you made decisions, and it changed forever changed your destiny. And then the fate of your children, you know, it's, you're a different person now, so you're a different father, and that different father is going to advise and be able to give his children different insights and advice than you would have if you'd have been on another path.
That's right. Absolutely.
So
I would recommend definitely that all of your audience, if they haven't already done so, shame on them if they haven't. But hey, if they're just discovering this Yahoo, that they should go get a copy of Guerrilla Marketing and read it. It's in its fourth edition now, published by Houghton Mifflin. Yes, the same publisher that published Mark Twain, in case you wondered. but in fact, I think it might still only be the only business book they ever published was Guerrilla Marketing. But it's sold well over 21 million copies now, 65 million copies when you look at all the different versions of Guerrilla Marketing.
Yeah.
But the fourth edition is actually dedicated to me. And then
really?
From a, I know,
oh,
right?
Wow, congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you so much. Like I said, he and I became dear friends. He was on our advisory board from the day we started to the day he passed away. We were good friends. But I also recommend a book called Guerrilla Marketing for Writers, which any of us could use from a business book perspective.
Yeah.
I'm blessed to be a co-author of that book with Jay and Rick Frischman and Michael Larson.
Are you serious?
Absolutely.
I've got that. Where is that? Oh, my assistant just made all of my bookshelves pretty, and now I can't find anything. But I completely missed that, or I didn't put the pieces together. I've got the book. I didn't realize you were one of the co-authors. Small world.
It really is. It's such a fun book too, because it first came out in 2000, 3 years before I published, before we started the publishing house. And I used it as my go-to book in my marketing, my book. And then when the authors decided, when Jay and the other authors decided to do a second edition, they not only brought it to Morgan James to publish, they asked if I would go on as a co-author, and hopefully I shared some wisdom. So the second edition came out in 2010 and is still selling phenomenally. Now it's about time for another update, but oh my gosh, it's so much, it's such a good book. Even before I got involved with it.
Yeah, here it is. Here it is. Yep, there you are, David L. Hancock.
That's right.
Your dog. That's cool. Let's see. So I took us down the rabbit hole, David. We were talking about the typical journey of your author. So you were in the war room. Y'all are talking about which authors are coachable and how to pick, and so then what happened next?
So we do about 120 nonfiction books a year, not 120 business books a year, and they're each hand selected. They're done on purpose, and we want to work with, you know, authors that are, like I said, passionate, enthusiastic, have got something really good to say. But our process is kind of unique, definitely unique in publishing. But those of you who are guerrilla marketers at heart, you'll appreciate this. So for every book that we end up accepting, the first thing that we do, and I think this is part of the reason why we've been so successful, but the first thing we do is we create what we call is this entrepreneurial vision mastermind group. And in this mastermind group, it's just really the two teams coming together for the benefit of the book, of course, and the audience who reads it and the author who writes it. The author's team may just be them. It could be them, and it could be their editor, it could be their agent or their publicist or their, you know, business partner, spouse, neighbor's dog, whoever's important to them is going to be important to us. I'm not going to judge them, you know, but whoever's important to them is going to be important to us. And on our team, we've got a guerrilla marketing expert, a branding expert, a PR expert, and a design expert, and whatever I can bring to the table. And together, we flesh out all the details. Obviously, the reason why we're writing the book and what we want the author, excuse me, what we want the reader to do with it once they start reading it, that's important. But we also flesh out things like, do we have the right title? Is it the best one? Can it be better? And do we have the right subtitle? Is it enough to get them to go to the back cover? Because that's really the whole purpose of the subtitle, is to share the premise or the promise of the book.
Right.
It could be as long as necessary, but as short as possible. But ultimately, it's designed just to catch that attention to get them to read more. You know, we flesh out those things. Is it great? You know, when should it come out? What time of the year? You know, what season? What price should it be at? Obviously, you can't charge what it's worth, but you can certainly get close to, you know, maximizing the profit for that particular genre. But we talk about the price, we talk about the size and the format, and, you know, what it should smell like and look like and feel like, all those details we make together. Whereas most publishers make those decisions without the author or including the author in very little aspect of it. And remember, publishers buy the intellectual property and take over and do with it as they please or as they see fit. The way that we work with the authors is the authors still hold their intellectual property and we'd make decisions together.
Yeah, I'm kind of sitting over here with my mouth open a little bit because I've never heard of that, certainly not witnessed that level of collaboration, and to have a design expert and a branding, and publishers have those things, but to have a dedicated person for each of those roles. And then to bring the author's team in to make those decisions together. That is a level of cooperation that I've not heard of. That's quite remarkable.
It was what I expected when I first published my book, but it's definitely not what I got.
No.
So I think it makes sense. I mean, I understood. I was an unknown first-time author, but still, you know. And, you know, once the book is done, that mastermind graduates to a marketing mastermind. And it's like, oh, crud, what do we do now? So we talk about the things that the authors could do, should do. And funny, it's we actually spend just as much time on the things that the authors shouldn't do, because you could waste a lot of time and money on doing stuff that doesn't work. And then we flesh out, you know, really for the life of the book, how can we continue to be relevant? How can we continue to make this book, you know, work in that space, and how the authors can leverage it, and you know, that now way, it's very, very important.
David, can you talk a little bit? Oh, go ahead. You're not finished. Sorry.
I'll keep on talking until you tell me to stop. So I was just saying until the book is no longer relevant or we're dead, either one, whichever comes first.
Whichever comes first. Could you talk about the, so, I mean, obviously y'all approach publishing different than a typical publisher. So one of the things, I know that one of the ways that you have promoted your company is to call it the entrepreneurial publisher. I think your current tagline is the future of publishing. So talk about the business model and not giving up or not taking intellectual property. I mean, that's... that just turns the whole publishing industry on its head. But talk about how what Morgan James does is different than traditional publishing, as well as different than straight up self-publishing.
Sure. So great notice there. And you're right. From our perspective, nobody knows this stuff better than you as an author. You're the authority in the space, not us. So we don't buy or take over the intellectual property of the authors. And for, you know, for most cases, the bigger houses with a lot of their authors, that's not a problem. They can own the intellectual property and they can do with it what they want. But for most entrepreneurs, it's not okay. You know, most entrepreneurs, that's their livelihood. That's not only the book, but it's also their secret sauce to what makes them successful as an entrepreneur, or me as a banker. It was the stuff that you know, that really helps us create other products and other services or other, you know, speaking gigs or anything, you know, that we entrepreneurs take and create because of that content. I found out really, really quickly that I was limited to what I could do with my content because I sold it to the publisher and I had no longer the rights to do so.
It was no longer your content.
That's right. And I've got friends, and I've experienced this, but I've got friends in the publishing space, published by big names, who wanted to do conferences and wanted to do other things around their book, and realized that they couldn't, or they had to revenue share with them, or they just ran into roadblocks of just the publisher getting in the way. And I always said, you know, there's got to be a place out there, someplace that just will stay out of my way, you know, as an entrepreneur. But there wasn't. And I've even got friends who had multi-million dollar advances from one of the top five publishers, and the publishers just arguing over the content and trying to get in the way of the content. One of my friends actually gave the multi-million dollar advance back and got out of his contract because it was too restrictive. They were getting in too much way. Yeah. So it's crazy. So I've always saw the value of the authors being in control.
About artistic integrity. I mean, he literally could put a price tag on his book's integrity.
That's right.
Wow.
Not everybody has that, but you're right. Yeah. So for us,
I'd have spent the money. I couldn't have given it back.
But the good thing, he was killing it on his other programs, that he still had some money left over. Oh, it's all good. But yeah, so that's important to us. And then the other ways that we work with the authors is just like them holding the intellectual property and being in control of the content. We make the decisions together. And so one of the things that I also didn't like about one of my first and really my second publisher, I won't name names, but I had, my first book, the publisher added three chapters to it, and I didn't even know it was there until I got my copies in the mail. And I didn't like the book at all because I had no input in the cover. It was just, the book worked. Don't get me wrong. It was a good book, but I had no control over the
report. And they should have at least consulted with you, right? Three whole chapters without your input or even your knowledge. Doesn't matter. They weren't yours.
I know, right? But I also had no input in the cover and no input in the final title or subtitle. And neither one of them, title or subtitle, I don't even think the subtitle did. It had nothing to do with, had no words of banking or mortgage, or it didn't have it in there. You have to read the description to find out, oh, this is a banking book, or look at the description or the category on the back of the book to realize this was a book on marketing your banking business. It was ridiculous. And then on my second book, it was a co-authored book with Jay Levinson called Guerrilla Marketing for Mortgage Brokers. We fought with the publisher on using the word internet because it was too much of a fad. It wasn't going to be around. And they told us this via email, which you know came to us over the internet. Imagine that.
Yeah, we're this email thing. But this, look, the next note we send you, it's going to be back on our fax machine, okay? Because this internet thing is going to be going. So make sure you have the right fax number.
That's right. I would have I wouldn't have laughed so hard if it did come over via fax, but it was an email. But that's why we do what we do. We make all the decisions together because, you know, I want the authors to be vested in this process. We want them to be proud of it and go out there and market themselves as that authority and display the book and you know, sell it because that's where we make our money. But it's hard to do it when trying to sell something that you don't like.
So Morgan James, it's still a royalty-based model, like traditional publishing, but the intellectual property remains with the author. Is that right?
It is, and the good news is, even though we're unconventional in how we do what we do, and what we've done is we've tried to blend the best of what we loved about traditional publishing: credibility, distribution, exclusivity, you know, reach. Education, but then also blend with the things we loved about the self-publishing side, author owning it, being involved in the process, speed to market, things along those lines. You know, we tried to blend the best of both worlds. Well, the good news now, 15 years later, well, it happened a long time ago, but 15 years later, you know, the industry sees us as a typical traditional New York house. And that's wonderful, but also potentially terrifying because we don't want to be a typical traditional New York house. But the good news is we do have that full bookstore distribution, which is important. We've had countless stories where some of our authors have got their biggest client who just happened to pick up the book at an airport Hudson store or at the Barnes & Noble in Timbuktu, North Carolina, that they would have never met or come across if it hadn't been in a bookstore somewhere, you know. But we also have that exclusivity. We only do a handful of these books a year. And then again, we've had our fair share of successes with the New York Times hits. We even pay small advances to our authors. I don't know if you knew that. We pay $100 advance. For us, it's political. Did you get one? Yes. Because if you say anything other than yes, people start to look down upon you. And then from a publishing perspective, if we don't pay advances or certain things we can and can't do in the space, that depends on whether we did or didn't pay in advance. It's kind of funny. But we pay it even though we don't buy anything with it. We make up for the little tiny advance by paying larger royalties than most publishers. So for instance, if you went to Entrepreneur Press with your business startup book, you know, you could get, you know, maybe 7 to 12%. We pay 20 to 30% to our authors. But we also don't have any fees. There's no services that we offer or sell. There's no upsells when somebody gets a contract with us. There's no packages that we offer. We make money by right. selling books. there are, however, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say there are three things that we do ask of our authors should their book get accepted. And I think they all make sense because it's been working for us. One of them does have a little entrepreneurial skin in the game. But if they're thinking big picture, they're definitely appreciating it. The first thing we want of our authors or ask of our authors is ultimately we want them to bring to us what they consider to be a fully edited proofread manuscript that if the world read it and it had their name on it, they'd be proud of it. Because it's their baby, their content. We don't want to get in the way. Now, we do, of course, go through it one more time to make sure that we don't look stupid, but we're not going to make any deletions or additions. We're not going to change the manuscript. That's the author's job, but we're going to try to make sure that we all look as good as possible. And then the second thing that we ask of our authors is really that most important thing to us is we really want them to be coachable. We want to try to discover or feel that they're willing to get out there and hustle and be coachable and be fun to work with and be passionate and enthusiastic about their topic. And then the last thing that we may ask of them is we may ask them to commit to buying a small number of books for their own platform. And that's something that tends to be a little unconventional, although a lot of the big publishers do it, but in larger numbers. But we may ask an author to commit to buying a certain number of books for the next 50 years or whatever, however long it takes. The most that we would ask an author to buy is like 2,500 copies. But we don't ask them to buy them at retail or discount off retail. Yeah. I mean, hopefully they'll sell that in their first few speaking gigs. we say, hey, just give us a couple dollars over the print cost and we're happy campers. So pretty simple. And then, you know, that commitment is worth to us more than anything. And they've got the life of the agreement to fulfill that commitment for however long that might be. And they can even fire us at any time. If we're not serving their needs or if we're ever getting in the way, we want to get out of the way. And that is very unconventional,
yeah,
but it's been working.
I'm kind of blown away, David. I mean, you know what, we've been following each other and I love, you know, all the stuff that you post I've never had the chance to have this conversation to understand quite how Morgan James' publishing model worked. And for everybody listening, this is fundamentally different than self-publishing services, which is where companies, they don't make money off of you selling copies of your book. They make money from you being their customer, from you paying them to do distribution, are you paying them to create the cover, are you paying them to promote your book. That's different than a traditional publishing model, which is where if you don't make money, the publisher doesn't make money. And that's really the big divide, right? Who makes money? How? I mean, follow the money. That's the old adage.
that's right.
I'm kind of blown away, David. This is like y'all have really blended the best of both worlds.
Appreciate you saying that. That's exactly what we set out to do. I had a good coach. Jay helped me write basically the core foundation of what we're doing as an entrepreneurial publisher. And it's just been so much fun.
Well, David, I mean, you've got a company to run and authors to coach. I don't want to take up much more of your time. We're coming to the end of the time that you so graciously agreed to give me. If people want to learn more about Morgan Publishing, if they want to talk about submission and those kinds of things, what's the best way to reach you?
Really, we're very discoverable online. Go to morganjamespublishing.com. I'm also on Twitter as David Hancock or Morgan James Pub. And they're also on Facebook at facebook.com/Facebook. But as far as submitting, we do have a great submission process online. It's going to make you work a little bit. We're going to ask and answer some great questions. But because of our connection, never hesitate just to throw me an email and say, hey, I met you on the podcast. I'd love just to get your feedback. I am more than happy to accept those emails and encourage you in the best way that I can. No matter if it's for if it's right for us or not, I'm happy to do that.
That's gracious of you, David.
Absolutely. My email is just simply david@morganjamespublishing.com, and I do all my own emails, but definitely mention how you discovered me, because it'll be one of the first questions I ask, so I can just kind of make sure that I'm serving everybody right, but I'll be honored to answer questions and encourage you as necessary.
Again, David, thank you so much for taking the time to share your experience, share the insights, and share the education on publishing options and what it's like to work with Morgan James and what authors need to be doing no matter who or how they're publishing. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. It's been great to get to know you a little bit better, and appreciate your audience for listening. Thank you.
Thank you.